Our luncheon topic today is sex and violence. It's certainly newsworthy. Senator Bob Dole made headlines by being against it. Sharon Stone, the actress, when she was here, said the marketplace should be the ultimate arbiter of movie content. If it sells, it's good. Our speaker today is closer to Dole than Stone. He may not like that comparison. He is Reed Hunt, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, and his speech is entitled, Television or Televiolence. As Mr. Hunt sees it, a recent appeals court decision gives his agency broadened power to restrict the showing of sexually explicit and violent programs by broadcasters and to require them to air a minimal amount of educational programs for children. Broadcasters may interpret the ruling differently, but Mr. Hunt, as the chief of police on the new information highway, is accustomed to controversy. Shortly after his boyhood classmate, Vice President Al Gore, swore him into office 20 months ago, Mr. Hunt pushed through a 7% reduction in cable TV rates. That decision, on top of an earlier cut, outraged cable executives. It was cited by Telecommunications Incorporated and the Bell Atlantic Regional Phone Company as the reason for calling off their planned $26 billion merger. So angry was John Malone, chairman of TCI, that he proposed a new form of televiolence. He said, shoot Hunt. Fortunately for Mr. Hunt, Mr. Malone could not be with us today. Now the FCC chairman faces a new threat. Republicans in Congress are talking about decimating or even eliminating his agency. The bill recently approved by the Senate would deregulate most of the telecommunications industry. It would let cable TV companies offer phone service and would allow phone companies to join in the new era of digital TV. And in a direct slap at Mr. Hunt, it would lift controls on cable rates. Republicans contend that increased competition produces the greatest benefits for the consumer. However, consumer groups disagree, arguing that the new bill, if it becomes law, would create new monopolies and drive up many Americans' cable and phone rates. Consumer representatives look to Mr. Hunt for protection in the public interest. They have a sympathetic ear. The 47-year-old Hunt, a graduate of Yale's law school, where he met a fellow named Bill Clinton, talks a lot about the public interest. The New Yorker magazine recently quoted him as saying, quote, we've got to be able to stand up to business on certain occasions and say, it's not just about competition, it's about the public interest, unquote. Reed Hunt, please stand up.
Hello, everybody, and thank you very much, Monroe, for that very provocative and stimulating history of my brief 20 months at the FCC. I also want to thank Greg Gordon for inviting me here and making this possible. When RCA President David Sarnoff unveiled the television at the 1939 World's Fair, he said simply, "Now we add sight to sound." 56 years later, we know there was a lot more to that than what he described. RCA made TVs, but television made us. Speaking personally, at age 47, I know what made me. I grew up with the Cleaver family. I thought Dobie Gillis was a role model. As a newlywed, I watched Hill Street Blues with my bride. While watching St. Elsewhere, I fed a bottle to my first child. And when my wife and I hit 40-something, we watched 30-something and thought it was the Nostalgia Channel. Thanks to TV, my generation has shared terrific entertainment, election night drama, tragic assassinations, a decade of war, and a walk on the moon. We've also seen how TV educated not just us, but also our children, particularly in their preschool years. Now, my wife and I are very glad that our three kids have all been able to watch some educational television free over the air. But all adults in this country are concerned about the values that in all ways as a society we pass on to our children. And we wonder now if television is hindering rather than helping our efforts to teach values to our kids. Here is a deeply disturbing statistic. 80% of Americans think TV is harmful to society and especially to children. Children themselves report that television encourages them to take part in sexual activity too soon, to show disrespect for their parents, and to lie and to engage in aggressive behavior. 56 years after Sarnoff unveiled the RCA television, we have all seen enough to know that it's high time to ask these questions. What is TV doing to our country and our kids? Is it good or is it bad? And in any event, how can it be better? These questions in particular must be asked by the Federal Communications Commission. It is our job to make sure that broadcast licensees use the public property of the airwaves to serve the, and I'm quoting from the law, public interest, convenience, and necessity. This is the prime directive that Congress has given the FCC. And we at the FCC have to weigh the pleasure Americans take from television against the alarming conclusions of science. First, more than 1,000 studies, including reports from the Surgeon General and the National Institute of Mental Health, show a, quote, significant link, unquote, between, quote, heavy exposure to TV violence and subsequent aggressive behavior, and also to lower levels of positive or altruistic behavior. Some studies have included specifically that TV accounts for an increase in the level of violence in our society by between 5% and 15%. Second, exposure to TV violence is not the problem of a few, it is a problem for virtually every American child. Preschoolers watch on average 28 hours of television a week, and more than 90% of the programs during children's prime viewing hours are violent. Every year, the average American child watches more than 1,000 rapes, murders, armed robberies, and assaults. And the average American teenager every year witnesses, listens to 14,000 sexual references on television. Third, television portrays a world of conduct that the great majority of Americans may watch, but nevertheless find objectionable. For example, this past Monday, children could watch daytime talk shows on, and I'm quoting from the newspaper guide, Jealous Wives, Little Girls Obsessed with Their Looks, One Night Stands, Women Lacking Self-Esteem, Teens Who Lie About Abuse, Sexy Lingerie for Criticized Wives, and Philanderer. That's the afternoon on television. When complaining about TV, few can resist the temptation to point fingers. Some blame broadcasters, calling them greedy. Others say competition lowers the quality of television. And many criticize advertisers for refusing to support quality. And always, always parents are blamed for just not turning the darn set off. Well, I'm not here to blame broadcasters or advertisers or parents. I'm here to point a finger at the only institution with the responsibility to act exclusively for the public interest, the Federal Communications Commission. Now, when the FCC was first giving licenses to broadcasters, it had a grand and cheery vision about what TV could do for the country. In 1945, FCC Chairman Paul Porter said, and I'm quoting, "Television's illuminating light will go far, we hope, to drive out the ghosts that haunt the dark corners of our minds, ignorance, bigotry, fear. It will be able to inform, educate, and entertain an entire nation with a magical speed and vividness." And in many, many respects, that vision came true. Television really has informed, educated, and entertained our entire nation. But the FCC did not foresee or guard against the downsides of television. So when we gave out broadcast licenses, we made a colossal mistake. In the bargain with broadcasters on behalf of the public, we did not ask for specific, concrete, and real commitments from broadcasters to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. The significance of this blunder was not immediately apparent. Trying to persuade families to buy TV sets, in 1951, the network scheduled 27 hours of children's TV a week. Parents thought TV was educational as well as good, clean fun for their kids, like me. But after TVs were sold to almost all households, the focus on family entertainment began to fade, and children's quality shows gradually diminished, and violence increased. Congressional hearings drew attention to the deterioration of the medium, but through the 1950s, the commission did nothing. Then in April 1961, FCC Chairman Newton Minow announced an assault on the do-nothing era in his famous first speech to broadcasters. He told them they would lose their licenses if they did not do something about the vast wasteland of television programming. Now, the vast wasteland has become the most famous description of television ever uttered. But as Newt Minow admits in his new book, Abandoned in the Wasteland, he had limited success. Meanwhile, TV confined kids' shows to Saturday morning, and children became bullseyes for the arrows of electronic advertising. We began, as one European critic has said, to raise our kids as consumers more than as citizens. In the 1970s, Democratic and Republican chairmen of the FCC fought against these trends. President Nixon's chairman, Dean Burch, and President Ford's chairman, Dick Wiley, both courageously pressed TV to do more for and less against children. But these FCC chairmen were not able to use specific, concrete, real public interest obligations as a tool for protecting children against TV's dangers and guaranteeing that TV would surely benefit kids. These FCC chairmen were hampered by the vague, vacuous, confusing, non-specific language of the public interest standard. In 1980, to fix this condition, President Carter's chairman, Charlie Ferris, launched a rulemaking that would have imposed on broadcasters specific requirements to deliver children's educational shows. But before he could muster a political consensus, a new administration came to town. The new chairman, Mark Fowler, reacted to the vagueness of the public interest standard by going in the opposite direction. Instead of making public service obligations concrete and real, he sought, in effect, to eliminate them. As he said, and I'm quoting, "The perception of broadcasters as community trustees should be replaced by a view of broadcasters as marketplace participants. The public's interest, then, defines the, quote, public interest," unquote. And putting his point more colorfully, Mark said the TV is just a, quote, toaster with pictures. Now, Mark Fowler is a friend of mine, and he is a principled man, and I disagree with him on principle. This particular toaster is not just browning bread, it is cooking our country's goose. And based on the principle that the FCC should treat broadcasters as only in business for the money, in 1984, the FCC repealed the policy that stations should air children's informational and educational shows. It wasn't specific, it wasn't concrete, but it was a policy, and it was repealed. Predictably, the three major networks went from 11 hours a week of such shows at the beginning of that decade to 2 hours a week by the end. In 1984, the FCC repealed regulations on commercial time limits in children's shows. Predictably, toy-based programs for kids boomed from 13 in 1980 to more than 70 by 1987, and the amount of commercials children saw per year doubled from 20,000 in the late 1970s to about 40,000 in 1987, so kids today can identify more cereals than presidents. At the same time, While zeroing out the public interest obligations of broadcasters, the commission triggered a tsunami of competitive pressure on broadcasters. Starting in 1981, the FCC increased the number of commercial TV licenses by more than 50%. Predictably, inevitably, the cutthroat competition for eyeballs forced even the most altruistic and well-intentioned of broadcasters to reduce the resources they could devote to the fundamentally non-commercial effort of serving the public interest, particularly to the effort of delivering educational TV to children. If every broadcaster had been under concrete public interest obligations, then all the news stations could have added to the supply of quality and educational kidvid. Instead, none had such a specific duty, so in a competitive environment, none could afford to deliver that product. In reaction to the FCC's philosophically principled, but I believe very wrong, abandonment of the effort to give meaning to the public interest standard, in 1990, Congress passed the Children's TV Act, and the FCC turned that law into another defeat for kids. Charged with the duty to implement the Children's TV Act, the FCC chose not to require specific time commitments for children's educational TV. As a result of the lack of specific public interest duties and the rigors of competition, there isn't any regularly scheduled weekday children's programming on the three traditional networks. And the one new network is an exception, but most of its kids' shows have little or no educational content. Most broadcasters are disturbed at what's happening to TV. But they say, and I agree, that it takes serious time, money, and commitment to program children's educational TV. It is easier and more profitable to do almost anything else. All broadcasters are driven by the pressures of the market to compete. And as long as the FCC does not ask all broadcasters to deliver concrete, specific public interest services, in the heat of competition, no single broadcaster can afford to do anything less commercial than the next broadcaster. Now, some people console themselves with a fallacy. They say we don't need children's educational TV because children would rather watch violent cartoons anyhow. My friends, let me tell you, my kids would rather stay on the playground than go into the classroom. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't have classrooms or public school. And just because television can offer electronic playgrounds, that doesn't mean it shouldn't also give us some over-the-air classrooms. Parents ought to have both choices. Market values are not the same as family values. And when the FCC commits itself exclusively to promoting profit-maximizing in broadcasting, it has not done its duty under the law for the kids and parents of this country. Now, fortunately, we have a second chance to figure out how TV can help us raise our kids. And this second chance might be the last chance. Tomorrow marks the beginning of the end of the analog chapter of television's history and the beginning of the digital chapter. Tomorrow, the FCC will commence a rulemaking concerning the possible grant to today's analog TV broadcasters of new licenses for new spectrum so that they can broadcast a digital signal. Now, this new digital television signal can send not just one channel of programming for each TV station, but as many as five of the same quality of today's pictures. Or it can be used to deliver a new, high-quality, eye-poppingly clear picture called high definition. Or it can be used 1 minute to send five standard digital channels and the next minute for one high-definition digital channel. Now, over the next decade, I believe that new televisions receiving both analog and digital signals and smartened up with computer equipment will spread into every home just as combined VHF-UHF TVs penetrated the market after 1963 when the law required that TVs have both VHF and UHF reception. The country had a chance at the beginning of the analog TV era to take full advantage of the full potential of television. And we now have a second chance to use this unbelievably powerful medium to inform, educate, and entertain. an entire nation. And as we enter the digital age of television, we must not waste the vast land of television's potential. Some say that the Federal Communications Commission should not concern ourselves with the impact of TV on our kids or on our country, because it is said the First Amendment bars any government restraint of free speech. Well, the First Amendment's principal purpose is to preclude the government from rewarding or punishing anyone for expressing opinions or asserting facts. The First Amendment was not intended to limit the capability of parents, adults, or government to protect and raise our children. Notwithstanding First Amendment concerns, in many cases, courts have held repeatedly that government can require certain magazines on open newsstands to be in brown paper wrappers, that government can zone certain kinds of stores away from residential neighborhoods, that government can require kids on motorcycles to wear safety helmets, that government can forbid radio and television shows from broadcasting indecent material until after 10 o'clock at night, when almost all kids are or ought to be in bed. None of these steps by government on behalf of the people are inconsistent with the First Amendment. And reasonable steps to use the airwaves in a real, specific, concrete way to provide public interest programs are also not barred by the First Amendment. So what are we going to do? Well, first, the FCC ought to get rid of rules restricting commercial competition and broadcasting, while at the same time replacing the emptiness of the public interest standard with limited but clear and enforceable public interest requirements. Specifically, we need new rules implementing the Children's TV Act. Parents need good choices when they turn on the TV, and the FCC has an obligation under the law to make sure that free over-the-air commercial TV delivers the choice of kids' educational TV. Second, just as the President and many congressmen and many senators have already said, parents need not just something to choose, they also need the power to choose. They need information, and they need computer hardware or software like the V-chip to help them select from the avalanche of programs pouring uninvited over the air into their homes. And third, I think broadcasters in each community should develop a contract for kids and community. In each market, all broadcasters would state concretely and specifically how they intend to give parents a choice of high-quality, decent, nonviolent, and educational programming, and how they would give parents in that community the power to choose it. In each market, broadcasters would tell their audience at the beginning of the period of their licenses to use the public airwaves what exactly they intend to do for kids and the community they serve. And then we at the Federal Communications Commission would base the renewal of these licenses on the success or failure that the broadcasters had in performing the way they promised. Market by market, the broadcasters' contracts for kids and community would give real meaning on a local level to public interest obligations. No more vagueness, no more confusion. In each market, we would have clear commitments by which to measure whether broadcasters have met their public interest obligations. Now, in his new book, Chairman Minow says, quote, "If I had it to do over again, I would concentrate every effort on improving children's TV. If I had to do it over again, that's where I would draw the battle line." None of the commissioners at today's FCC should have to live with that regret. We can draw the line. We can fight for kids now. And I am as optimistic now about the future of television as FCC Chairman Paul Porter was in 1945, and I have the benefit of experience that he was denied. We now know what the FCC has done that doesn't work. We now know what the FCC and all of us can do differently. And we'll be hearing from lots of lawyers and lobbyists inside the Beltway about how we should proceed on our children's TV rules and on digital television, but we need to hear from the American public. And you can let me know what you think by writing the FCC or by sending an email to kidstv@fcc.gov. Now, in the end, we, the FCC, broadcasters, the American people, we need to recognize that TV can be more than it has been. And the question is this: do we want TV to help our children or to hurt them? That's the choice. Let's make it the right way. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, sir. Now the hard part, some of the questions. Are there any television shows that you will point to specifically that you believe are too violent?
You know, the answer to this question is yes, and I am not going to identify them for a reason, and I want this to be very clear. The FCC should not stand for the Federal Censorship Commission, and what we have to focus on here are ways that broadcasters and communities can develop a way of delivering a product that parents will be comfortable having their kids watch. And I'm saying here a couple of things about that. First of all, it's important to have a choice. It's important to have some educational TV so that there's something else to turn to. And second, it is crucially important that parents have the ability to make a choice, that they have information, that they be told what programs are likely to be inappropriate in the view of those people who are putting those programs on, and that they have the tools, hardware and software, to make those selections. That's what we need to focus on, and not the individual taste of any particular commissioner. That's exactly what we do not want to focus on.
Thank you. Now, another member asks, what basis is there for saying the public interest is served only by educational programming for children? Why isn't comedy in the public interest?
The public interest is more than one thing, and it is definitely in the public interest to have free over-the-air entertainment. And it is, in my view, absolutely not enough for the public interest to be served by free over-the-air entertainment. This is about what's missing. This is about how to deal with what is, and about how to fill in the blanks on what's missing.
All right, let's take a worst-case scenario. Suppose those in Congress who want to abolish or severely downsize the FCC are successful. What do you see happening?
The effort by some think tanks in Washington to call into question the existence of the FCC should be, in my view, understood at two levels. First, it's a demand that government be smarter, trimmer, more efficient. I completely agree with that. There's been more reform and reorganization of the FCC in the last 20 months than in any previous time in its history, and we need to do more of that. The second level of the consideration of whether we need an FCC is fundamentally a debate about whether there is or isn't a public interest stake in the communications revolution. And fundamentally, if you agree with the way this issue was approached through the 1980s, you will ultimately be able to reason through the conclusion that you don't need much, if any, FCC. But if you believe in the public interest, if you believe that the airwaves belong to the people and not just to the private sector, if you believe that the media that change our society are media that we all ought to have some stake in at least talking about and trying in some way to have work for us, if you care at all about the public interest as opposed to the single-minded pursuit of profit by the private sector, then you're going to want to have an FCC, and if you don't have one, you're going to want to invent one.
If a telecommunications bill that passed the Senate makes it through the House, will President Clinton sign it?
I want to be very clear about this. I do not know.
All right. You keep me hopping. The FCC tomorrow is supposed to vote on Rupert Murdoch's ownership of the Fox network. Can you give us your opinion on the issue? I'll leave it at that.
Well, if you don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Although that would violate current law, if so, aren't you bowing to political pressure from Murdoch?
That's right.
I said we should not be the Federal Censorship Commission. I am not going to state in advance the vote on this item. One of the things I find distressing and unfortunate about the history of this item is that the Commission's processes here, when they were supposed to be confidential, weren't always kept confidential, so I'm not going to violate that particular standard. I will say this. What this investigation that we conducted has all been about is actually very simple. Were we going to respond to the serious allegations that were made? Were we going to weigh the evidence? Were we going to respond to Fox's own request that once and for all we investigate the question of foreign ownership and reach a conclusion? What it came down to was this. Were we going to be the FCC, the Fox Cover-Up Commission, or were we going to be the FCC, the Fair and Candid Commission? And I'm telling you this, we have passed the test in the mind of everyone on the staff and in my mind. We investigated thoroughly, we found out the facts, the things we found out were not previously in the public domain, they were not previously known, and they have caused us to weigh and judge fairly, and we're going to weigh and judge fairly tomorrow.